Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 453. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Hello, hello, hello.
And Emily Soden.
Yo!
Whoa. Did we all enjoy Gamescom? I, for one, had a great time over there. It was surprisingly quiet. In fact, it seemed really small. It looked a lot like my bedroom.
Yeah, I didn't. Do you know, I didn't bump into a single person.
No. It was, they brought my bed all the way over there. It was really weird, and all my stuff. It was
nice of them.
Oh no, wait, I just didn't leave the house. There it is. I forgot. But everyone's just come back from our team, and I think they're all like now suffering from their Gamescom PTSD. Has anyone been excited by anything remotely related to Gamescom?
I'm excited that it's over.
Cool.
I don't have to think about Gamescom anymore.
Fair. Wow. See, this
It's just, unfortunately, it's done that thing where everything gets announced at E3, and then it's Gamescom time, and everyone goes, oh, yeah. Oh, I guess now the European press can just play all the stuff that we had at E3. Everyone already went to E3, so, yeah.
It's a problem with the internet, isn't it? It gets everywhere. But we actually got some exciting new announcements, in fairness. We're going to talk about them, including the likes of Reigns has tied into a large television franchise, and we're all very hyped for it for real, not just having to pretend to be hyped. We've got news about Shadowgun War Games, which is the newly announced spin-off from Shadowgun Legends, which looks like it could actually be quite good. There's going to be a very, very well-known mobile game turned into a movie. Gaming movies, oh, they're always good, aren't they? They're never a bit rubbish. Let's see if this one can buck the trend. We've also got new releases, including the likes of the iPhone release of Rome Total War. We've got Powerless, news about Prison Architect, 1 Hour, One Life, Night Trap, 25th edition, and more. Plus an interview with the creator of New Star Soccer, who's recently launched New Star Soccer Manager, and chats to me about where it came from and what it was like to suddenly have the biggest game in the world kind of out of nowhere. But first, the news. We all love Reigns around these parts, both the first one and the second one. We've seen a bunch of games adopt the mechanic of swiping left and swiping right to make decisions and keep different factions happy. However, Reigns itself has introduced a new branch to its ever-growing tree of a Reigns franchise action, and this is a match made in heaven. They're doing Reigns Game of Thrones. Which is Reigns. No, it doesn't work, does it? This is a brilliant idea. This is one of those things where it pops up and you go, hang on. Yes, actually, fantastic. Like, what could make Reigns better? Actually knowing the characters that you're playing as and the having all the foreknowledge of, like, Tyrion's come up to me and he's asking me to do stuff. Suddenly that becomes even more interesting than, you know, the courtier comes up, an anonymous character like you get in the Reigns default game.
They teased the news sort of earlier this week when they released that map of Westeros, but
in the Reigns style,
when it dropped yesterday, that it was doing, and then they released the pre-order stuff. Like, actually looking into what the game is going to entail is so exciting, because they're just going to put loads and loads of, like, mini stories and backstories and, like, events related to each character, like, within the actual gameplay, as opposed to just sort of playing as a faceless king or queen trying to take over from all of the regular characters you play as the individual characters.
Yeah, yeah. So they released a lovely little teaser trailer, which is just the throne in Game of Thrones, and then each of the different characters sitting on it. So your Jon Snow sitting on there with the icy surroundings, and then the tile in the middle of the screen breaks away, like in the main game, and it swipes to the side, and suddenly Cersei's sitting on the throne, and all the backgrounds change. And A, the character likenesses work surprisingly well, despite the character designs of the game being so minimal. Because they're just a few lines in Reigns. Like, they're really not detailed faces, but they have managed, you can instantly see, partly because of the outfits and that, you can instantly identify all of the characters. And you're like, nice. And I happen to know for a fact that Lee Alexander, who wrote the second game, Reigns Her Majesty, is a massive, massive Game of Thrones fan and loves Cersei to bits and got to contribute some stuff to this as well. So she's got to write for Cersei, her favourite character. So I'm thinking there's going to be some love in this one.
Yeah, for sure.
usually, you know, when they slap a new IP onto an existing franchise to sell stuff, it can be quite cynical.
Mm.
So I'm thinking of, like, Temple Run had a big run of games where it was like Temple Run, Wizard of Oz, and, you know, Temple... They did a Wizard of Oz game, and they did a couple.
Temple Run Brave is the one I remember.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. And it was just a straight-up reskin. And with those games, there's nothing you can really do to it to make it tie in other than just change the look of all the characters. You know, but you're still just running, and that's all it is. So it's like, fine, it's the same game. But with this, as you say, Em, you can start building in elements of the lore and the history of the Game of Thrones and the way that each of the characters behave and react to each other. And there's going to be pathos now, because you know the history of everyone involved and what their pre-existing relationships are.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if people play it as they would play the characters or play it how they would do it themselves, because obviously you know who these people are and you'll think, oh, well, they wouldn't do this if, like, one of the two options. So it'll be interesting to see how people decide to play the game now rather than choosing what they think is best, if they're going to stick with what they know of the lore and the characters and stuff.
Mm.
Adds a whole extra dimension to your decision making.
It does. Ooh. But you've still got to balance those ratings at the top, those different parts, so you still have to do what must be done or you will just die. So, yeah, it does introduce the opportunity for a bit more role-playing, though, you're right. But you can see the trailer up now. Apparently October is going to be the release date, so not long to go. I'm very excited. I think this could be absolutely wicked. We just found out about, or I should say I just found out about, Shadowgun War Games, which was revealed, or will be revealed, this Saturday, as you're listening to it, so tomorrow as we record it. This is Madfinger's spin-off to their, I think, fairly successful Shadowgun Legends, which was a very good third-person, all-round shooter thing. I actually liked it. It had flavours of the always-online Destiny vibe, where there's hub worlds and you can see other people rummaging around, and you can do single-player stuff and multiplayer stuff, and it felt good. It was actually decent. This one is more in line with something like a hero shooter, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a 5v5, like, arena combat kind of deal.
So you've got your flavours of Overwatch, as in we'll pin it down to 5 characters, each of whom is a, you know, unique set of weapons and skills and that.
I think, if I remember rightly, they're focusing, like, they're using this game to focus a bit more on esports.
Wouldn't surprise me. We mentioned last week about the esports proliferation, and yeah, people are now designing games with esports specifically in mind.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's where everything's going, isn't it? And I think they've got a... Tomorrow at Gamescom, they've got a big competition thing, obviously between players who have already been playing it, but it should be kind of fun to watch.
Mm. So there's a beta that's going to appear towards the end of the year, but if you go to the website itself, we'll be able to pre-register for it if you want to have a go. But it's not until next year. They're talking about worldwide launches. Now, video game to movie adaptations are, without exception, balls.
No, I disagree with this.
Oh, here we go. Come on then.
I thought the Jake Gyllenhaal Prince of Persia film was actually pretty decent.
Rubbish,
all right,
mate.
All right, jeez. I didn't realise.
Nah, that was
garbage. I realised that was such a controversial opinion.
Speak to Gemma Arterton. There you go.
Yes.
That's who I was looking for. Yeah, she did not have a good time on that film. Apparently,
she?
No, apparently it was not fun for her, being the only woman on the cast. It was Jerry Bruckheimer tad. And not good at all. But news of a new video game to movie adaptation has arisen, and it has slightly piqued my interest in a way that most others don't. So we've got the announcement that Patrick Osborne, working in collaboration with Paramount Pictures, and this is Patrick Osborne, who's done, I don't know, he's done a full-length film. He's certainly done a short film for Disney called Feast. Which both
he's been the animator for, like, a bunch of Disney films, like Big Hero 6 and all sorts.
Okay. And the Feast short is good as well, in its own cute little way. They're going to be doing a movie version of Monument Valley, which, in the scheme of things that I am interested in, this is on the higher end of it when it comes to video game movies, because Monument Valley... And they're going to do it live action as well. It's going to be live action characters, but the film is set in the Monument Valley universe, which makes me think of two things. Firstly, yeah, I think of Inception-style stuff, you know, where the world twists and bends and moves around and, you know, folds in on itself and people walk up walls and all that kind of thing. And I like that. that all that visual surrealism, that Doctor Strange style, you know, destroying and rebuilding the world where physics doesn't really apply properly, that's cool. That's good visual stuff. And I want to see that. On the other hand, it makes me think of David Bowie running around in leggings going, "How you turn my world, you precious thing." Which is also good. I don't know if Labyrinth is still a big reference for the kids these days, but I grew up with it. Reasons to be excited? Are we excited?
I wasn't, like, I really wasn't on board with it until I saw who was behind it, like, who was helping direct it and animate it and things.
Mm.
That is a major kind of, oh, okay, so this is going to have some semblance of quality to it.
Yeah. I still think it is a very good chance it could not be good, but...
Oh, yeah.
The good thing about it for me is that there's a problem with video game movies as a whole, which is either they completely ignore the source material, make up a load of old crap, and it's absolute rubbish. See Super Mario Brothers, the movie. Or they stick rigidly close to the plot from the game, and it ends up being very boring. See Tomb Raider, the most recent one, the movie. This doesn't have a plot, per se. The original Monument Valley plot is like gossamer thin, because it's all kind of ethereally done where... And there's a kind of a spoiler at the end which reveals what the character actually is, which I guess they're going to be ignoring completely, because apparently it's going to be human beings wandering around this world, so... Which means that the only thing they're really going to be importing, presumably, is the universe. This idea of impossible geometry and interlocking shapes, and then they're going to have to just come up with some reason why these guys are wandering around this world and what happens. So it's, for me, it feels like all of that will just come ex nihilo, and that means they've got a blank slate to come up with whatever they like.
Yeah. If they have a good story behind it, then that kind of gives them the foundation to build on. And I have no idea why this film keeps popping into my head, but I keep thinking of Pagemaster.
I've not seen that. Is it like an old Jim Henson's thing?
It's just like an old, like, this was like my childhood animation, where it's he goes from being a real boy... like in the real world, and then he ends up being sucked into a book, I think, if I remember it right.
Oh my god, 1994 Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Joe Johnson. Okay, alright. No, I didn't say it. It looks like, well proto-Potter. He's got the little round glasses and everything.
Yeah, it's so good. Like, that was kind of one of my favourite films, like, of my youth.
17% on Rotten Tomatoes, Em.
I do, honest to God, I don't care. I was a child. It's one of those things. But, the weird thing is, I think it's that whole... conversion from the realistic into the unrealistic, as it were. Yeah. Same as Alice in Wonderland, where she goes from real life to this fictitious world.
Sure.
And then probably back again. Like, I assume they're going to get sucked in or have to go into this world and then jog on, do what they do, and then get out again.
Jog on! The totem comes out of nowhere and goes, "All right, lads, jog on."
Yeah, go on, jog on.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I can imagine they get sucked into something. As long as they don't do what they did with Jumanji, where, like, someone's sitting on their phone playing Monument Valley, and then they get sucked into the phone. Like, imagine that. That would suck so hard.
That's going to be the plot now.
Oh, no.
I think you've jinxed it.
Well, it's a video game movie. It was already doomed. but it's more interesting because a lot of what they convert when they do video game movies, it's always action. That's the thing they convert. They convert action movies. They make Mortal Kombat. They make Resident Evil. They make something where it's like shooty shooty guns, Tomb Raider, bangity bang, action adventure. That's what they always do. Then the reason I was slightly interested in Bioshock when they were toying around the idea was that A, they were going to give it to Gore Verbinski. And whether you like the Pirates movies or not, and I personally don't, he's got an eye, that boy. He's got a proper look. And seeing that world put on screen with, you know, pseudo-political plot stuff and the doomed utopia, that could have been good. It would have looked damn good. Whereas this is like, there is no action in this. They're taking a puzzle game and turning it into a film. Let's remember the last time they did that, we got Battleships.
Why would you remind anybody of that film?
Which is technically a puzzle game, but it's a puzzle game still that's still predicated on combat. It's still based on shooting, even if you are shooting pegs on a turn-based kind of way. Whereas this is not, there's no violence in Monument Valley, unless you're being, you know, munched by one of those crow things or something. It's just pure puzzle. It's pure aesthetic puzzle brain twisty stuff. And I like films like that. So could this be the first ever good video game movie?
It can't be as bad as the Angry Birds movie.
That got quite good, well rated as far as those things go. I think it's got about 40 or 50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It was bad. It was bad, bad, bad.
I haven't watched it.
I was
why
tipsy
would I?
Whilst watching it in the cinema. Okay. It was bad.
So yeah, that's going to be, I guess, in production, and we can see it in the next like year or two, provided it doesn't get canned when someone up top goes, but where are the machine guns? No machine guns! In the bin with your production schedule. So there you go. Monument Valley still to come. And very quickly, before we move on, Saints Row the Third got announced for Switch, which in and of itself isn't particularly interesting, I don't think. Not that I dislike the Saints Row games. They're fine. But it's not the fourth one. They've done the third one. Deep Silver going, hey, we're going to bring it to Nintendo Switch. Here we go. What this feels like to me, and it's the thing I said it in the Slack chat, and then I went online and I saw other people saying something similar, which is, this feels to me like they know, or someone knows, that GTA 5 is coming to Switch. And so they're getting theirs out before GTA 5 comes over, and no one pays attention to any other third-person open-world shooty game. That's completely unsubstantiated, by the way. That is pure speculation. But I reckon GTA 5 will probably turn up. It's been everywhere else. Would you play Saints Row the Third again? It's been a while.
Well, the thing is, Saints Row 4 was infinitely better.
It was
because
mental.
It introduced all the superpowers and stuff and all that crazy nonsense. And it just took what Saints Row 3 was and threw in loads of extra really great stuff. And it was weird that they haven't gone with that one and instead stepped back.
Yeah. Saints Row 4 felt almost like it threw a bit of Crackdown into the mix.
Yeah.
Which is no bad thing. But yeah, I know what you mean.
But Saints Row 3 was still a great game.
Mm.
And but I don't know if I'd play it again. Saints Row 4 I've completed twice, I think.
Okay.
But Saints Row 3 I probably wouldn't go back to.
I've just got this feeling that, you know, GTA 5 will appear. If that happened, would it be the first time GTA appeared, a proper GTA game appeared on a Nintendo console?
Nope.
What did they release?
The original GTA, well, there was a version for Game Boy Advance about a decade ago. And then there was also Chinatown Wars on DS, which was fantastic.
I was thinking of the mainline GTA franchise.
Yeah, there hasn't been a mainline.
But yes, you're absolutely right.
Nintendo,
I remember the DS games, because they eventually came to mobile, some of those. Chinatown Wars did as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chinatown Wars was so good.
It was good, wasn't it? I enjoyed
it was
that.
So just spent hours dealing drugs.
Of course you did.
Well, that was the best part of it. You could just, there's this whole inbuilt economy around drug dealing. It's like, this is great. Just do this whole game instead of bothering with the storyline.
So yes, this is going to be, we're going to get more information about it from Gamescom, which is still technically going a bit. So you expect to see some trailers or something pop up of the Switch version of Saints Row the Third very soon. But parentheses, GTA 5 almost definitely coming. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a pretty good chance if you're listening to this, then you're a mobile games fan. And if you're a mobile games fan, then there's an equally good chance you've played New Star Soccer, which arrived on mobile way back in 2012. It made a huge impact, not only being downloaded by numerous people, millions all over the world, but also winning a BAFTA for the best sports game at the 2013 BAFTA Awards. No small feat when you're going up against the likes of EA. I am joined by the creator of New Star Soccer and the most recent release, New Star Soccer Manager, Simon Reed. Simon, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's fine. Nice to meet you.
Just to go back a little bit before we jump to the most recent game, you started playing games fairly young, like a lot of gamers and would-be game designers. I saw you reference games like Sensible Soccer and Kickoff 2, which speaks to my heart, because I think the Amiga was the first computer thing that I ever got, so solidarity there. And then that turned into you wanting to design games, and you started working on the New Star Soccer series. Now, people who came to you from the mobile game might not be aware, but the New Star Soccer franchise existed for quite some time before you came to mobile, right?
That's right, yeah. Started out on PC. Basically, I kind of taught myself how to code kind of Windows apps. And I just wanted to make a football game. I always wanted to make football games, really. And it was just a very simple text-based game where you were the star player. And that was probably around 2002, 2003, something like that.
Okay. So it was a full decade of, like, working on that game before it went to mobile then? Because you did the original one, you got up to, what is it, number 3 or 4?
It was actually 5 on 5? PC. Okay. Yeah. There were a couple other things along the way, like tennis, Grand Prix game, and like a spacey racing game, which, you know, they kind of didn't do particularly well. It was the football game that was close to my heart, and lots of ups and downs over those 5 versions. It was a third one that allowed me to quit my full-time job and do this as a full-time job for what I'd always wanted to do, making games. And after that, I think New Star Soccer 4 was a bit of a disappointment. Didn't have anywhere near the success of the previous one. New Star Soccer 5 was, you know, pretty good. It was really laid the foundations for the mobile version, which came after that.
Well, you said it started off as kind of purely a text-based game, and if you've played New Star Soccer on mobile, you'll know that it's a little bit of a mixture of the two. Largely, it's text scrolls, and you're getting updated about what's happening within the match via a text feed, but then it will cut to bits of real-time gameplay where you, you know, kick a ball or make a pass or something like that. So you splice up the two mechanics there. The mobile one really did blow up in a huge way that I think, by reading past interviews with yourself, even caught you by surprise that it got as big as it did. What do you think it was that made it blow up in that way, whereas previous versions had had success but not to the same degree? Do you think, I mean, the payment model? Is it the exposure and the ubiquity of everyone having a phone so everyone could download it? Is it the form of that game fitting the function? What do you think it was?
I think it generally, with a game that explodes in that way, it's a combination of all those things. There was a lot of refinement over the years on the previous games, which I kind of worked out, you know, what were the fun bits, what were the less interesting bits, and tried to boil that down as succinctly as possible. Mm. And it just seemed to really work on the phone. You know, there was the whole new element of tapping on the ball as it came across the screen. You know, I hadn't done that before, but I knew instantly that worked really well. And it worked on a touchscreen where you can't really do that on console, although we are hoping to try it at some point.
Oh, okay.
Everything just seemed to fit on a phone. You know, you could dip in an hour in 2 minutes, or you could play it for an hour. Most people were playing it for hours and hours and couldn't stop playing it. And it was that whole word of mouth, you know, thing that made the game really explode.
Yeah, because it was one of those things where it's not, you often get games that come from very big established publishers or developers, and they've got, you know, CGI cutscenes which cost more than the budget of entire games, and there's all this sort of generated hype behind it, you know, kind of a corporate one. Whereas this really was just people like tapping you on the shoulder and going, "Have you played this? This is really good. You know, I've been playing this for the entire week and haven't stopped." And that kind of playability seems to carry through to New Star Soccer Manager, which our reviewer, the guy who did it, Harry, basically had played it, I think, by 72 hours by the time he came to do the review. You know, a lot of games, when you play to review, you play them through to completion, of course, but sometimes you're glad to have completed the game, whereas he was sort of still going. There must have been a part of you that was like, well, this was ridiculously successful, I'm just going to do this again, like New Star Soccer 2.0. But you have gone broader. You've decided to do much more of a management-style game. So whereas the first one was, or the first mobile game, focused on you as the star player, working your way up, this one is, no, you are managing the entire team. You start right at the bottom. There's a lot more plates to spin in it.
Mm.
Was that a bit of a gamble, doing that? Were you scared of maybe alienating people who are into the more streamlined original game? Or
no, not afraid of that. It was. It's just something I've always wanted to do. You know, I love football games. I used to love manager games, but I've kind of lost my love for them. They've, in particular, football managers, just outgrown me. It's just far too complex, and I wanted to do something much more hands-on, where you could just get stuck in, play some football, you know, trade players and stuff. So it was a case of just wanting to make this game, and not I wasn't concerned about the appeal. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, the appeal is much less than, you know, the original soccer game. But on the other hand, people that are playing this seem to be really, really into it, and they're, you know, happy to spend money on the card packs and things. So it's a balance between maybe not having the mass appeal that it used to have, but actually it monetizes better. And, you know, we're all really proud of what we've made, and it's seemingly quite successful.
And I guess with the original game not being sequelized, that game therefore stands alone. People can still get it. So, you know, it doesn't take away from anything.
There are, you know, ideas of how we would do a sequel for New Star Soccer. Mm. And that's something we'll look at, you know, in the next few months once we're kind of, once managers out on all formats and so on.
So you say that more traditional management games started to put you off a little bit. They became ridiculously complicated and granular and whatnot. But you were a fan of them originally. What did you remove to make the game that you wanted to play? What elements did you go, right, we don't need this, we don't need this, this is too complicated, this is too silly, here's what we need, here's the spine that you need for a nice streamlined management game?
I'm not sure it was thinking about what we needed to remove. I think often, well, what I found with New Star Soccer is actually the best way to make a game appealing is to remove any unnecessary elements and just keep in, you know, the good stuff, which you can't do without. And that's kind of what I've tried to do with Manager. It's like, obviously you need to be able to buy and sell players. You need to be able to train them up. The whole idea of using trading cards was really appealing. And it's just like, let's try and get all the fun stuff about Manager games and forget about the rest. So, you know, there aren't endless screens of stats. You know, each player only has 5 stats, five skills or whatever, and it's a case of trying to make those guys feel human and not just an entry in a database. And then also having the match action where you could actually have an impact and, you know, score some goals and not just sort of sit there wait and see what happens.
Well, having now been working within the sort of football game genre for over a decade, what have you learned about what people want from these games? I mean, you must have had a lot of feedback from players from New Star Soccer Manager and also from New Star Soccer, and you've obviously been iterating on the concept for a long time. What did you discover? Like, okay, people like this, we added this went down really well, or we removed this and people screamed because we'd taken it away from them. And likewise, what did you add where people were like, we don't need this bit so much?
I'm not sure. I think we're still finding that out with Manager. The feedback's been really positive so far. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure. There are some elements still to come, like the kit editor is being, you know, asked for a lot. Design your own sort of kit styles and colours and things. So that's one thing that's being asked for a lot. In New Star Soccer, I'm not sure. It just seemed like everything we added to the game was well received. You know, initially it didn't have international competitions. When that was added, it was hugely popular. And I think there were other elements that I removed, such as there was a kind of interception mini game where you had to run across the screen to stop the ball getting to the opponent.
Yeah,
which was always my sort of, I felt that was the weakest element, so I removed that. Nobody seemed to mind, so you know, it's like, yeah, okay, let's just keep doing what we think is right, and it never, there was never any kind of impact where people go, no, this is terrible. So,
well, you were working solo on New Star Soccer for a long time up until the mobile release and then the BAFTA, and since then you've got an office which is now external. You have people who you work with now. You've got a team under you. Is that right?
Not exactly. I actually joined up with Martin Brown, who he was one of the founders of Team 17 in the early days. And some of the guys that he used to work with have a company up in Wakefield. And I just started working with Martin and you know, collaborating on New Star Soccer, essentially, and which allowed me to sort of focus on the creative aspects and not worry about the technical side. And that team grew, and then we did Cricket Manager. And this is a relationship that works really well. So, you know, we're hoping to just carry on as we are.
How is that? Because I've spoken to Team 17 myself as part of just, you know, going around conferences and interviewing folks. But again, being an Amiga kid as my first computer, Team 17, like, oh, it's Team 17. It's like Worms and Alien Breed and things that I used to really like. So suddenly being introduced to the wider world. I mean, you see the BAFTA photos and you're up there with sports stars and all that kind of stuff. Must have been quite surreal, but working with people whose games you used to play as a kid, what was that like?
It was surreal. I mean, the whole experience, you know, around that time of the BAFTAs, it was quite bizarre, very exciting. And meeting heroes, you know, that made games, in particular John Hare, and guys like that. And it was very surreal. But I mean, what you tend to find is that these guys are just really passionate about what they do, and you know, you connect with them on that level. And it was really nice, because for for about 10 years, it had just been me sat in my flat with a laptop, you know, just working on games. And, you know, I kind of like that way of work. That's kind of why I'm still how I work. But I collaborate with these guys up north. And it is good to dip into that world of the industry, if you like. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm quite insular and I prefer just sort of keep myself distance from it.
So when it comes to the future for the franchise, you've already been with it for a long time at this point. Is this something that you're going to, you know, stick with basically until people decide they don't want any more of it? Do you still have that desire to keep going with football? Or is there a point in the future you can see yourself being like, right, I think I've done my football stuff now and I want to go and, I don't know, make a fishing game or something like that?
Yeah, well, I do feel like I've probably peaked in terms of, you know, I'll never have a success like New Star Soccer again, which is, you know, it's kind of sad, but it's also something to be really proud of. And and I do have other interests outside of video games, so it's I can see myself moving on to other things. In the meantime, I'm quite happy just taking a kind of creative role and not doing the coding day to day on future projects. But I think there will come a point where I just say, okay, I'm done with video games completely and I'm going to try something else. But that's not for a while yet, I don't think.
Okay, good to hear. And for New Star Soccer Manager itself, it's, you know, been out for a month or two now, I guess?
Yeah.
Right about that. What are your plans for updates? I'm sure people who play it now are listening. So what can they expect to see in the future if they continue to play?
Well, the kit editor is just around the corner. That should be in soon. We've got, obviously, the Android version needs to come out, and I'm assured it's about a week away, but, you know,
that's what
we'll
I hear.
See.
Yes.
it's always a week away, so hopefully that'll be out very soon. Then we're looking at other formats, so we've got a PC version, which is imminent, hopefully to launch on Steam at some point.
Okay.
And then we're looking at, you know, console versions. So that's where what we're focused on. There will be updates along the way to, you know, to the versions that are already out. Quite what the updates contain, I couldn't say for sure, because they're kind of in a state of flux at the moment, and we just want to make sure there's some really interesting things. We've got lots of ideas. It's just sort of nailing down what are the important ones and what are going to appeal.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing what those updates are. As you mentioned, you can get New Star Soccer Manager now on the App Store on iOS at the minute, and I am reliably told that it's out on Google Play very, very soon. So keep your eyes peeled for that one. And Simon, thanks so much for talking to me.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Out and about this week, Rome Total War has now appeared on iPhone. It's been out on iPad for a couple of years, and they've been bringing over all of the expansions and bits and bobs, bit by bit. Now they've found a way to smush it all onto your iPhone. So it's basically about getting the UI right with this one. I remember talking to them and interviewing them when they did the iPad version, and the biggest challenge they found was cramming it all onto an iPad in a way that works. And I know they'd been talking about the phone version, and that it was going to be a challenge. I don't know if you have a build on it. We'll have to see whether it stands up and works as well on iPhone. I think more and more now it's becoming easier to do it. I think as the phones have gotten slightly bigger, that's helped. Trying to put it onto the screen size of an iPhone 4S, maybe not. But now everything's about 5 inches across. I think it's defaulted a bit more now to that note-ish size. There is still the thing of tiny, teeny, tiny troops scamping around on screen. But hey, I think we've all got accustomed to looking at things that occupy the space of two tiny pixels. It's premium, £9.99, $9.99, as all the Rome games have been. Check back for some hands-on stuff with it. We should probably give it a go. Now, other stuff that's come out this week, it hasn't been huge in terms of new releases and big games and stuff like that, but I've grabbed a few things. So I had a quick go on Botheads. Anyone play that? Botheads 2?
Nope.
It's a floaty game in the style of, I guess, Badlands, you know, that kind of control where he's floating around in the middle of the screen. This one, you tap left to move left and up. So he activates like a rocket booster 45 degrees behind him. So he kind of ascends and moves forward. And if you tap the left side of the screen, he goes the other way. So no matter what you do, he goes up a bit. So it's all about choosing when to thrust and throttle, and then it'll just, you know, release and it'll go down, and you end up navigating. It's much more maze-like, whereas Badlands is a real sense of forward momentum. This has got a lot more spinny things in your way, and then maze-like bits where you suddenly have to ping around using springs, a bit like Sonic, when he goes doo 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 in Chemical Plant Zone, and then zooms up. It's got some of that in it. It's pretty lo-fi. It's not an especially pretty-looking game. It's functionally fine. It's got a lot of weird, surreal pop-ups. But when you win the game, these bizarrely photoshopped, weird human characters like pop out and genuinely like slightly caught me by surprise when I was playing it, to the point I was like, when I won the game. So it's going for tongue-in-cheek zaniness. I mean, it's, you know, fine. It's free to play. I'm not going to jump up and down about it, really. But Botheads 2 is the name of that one. It's a free-to-play one. Unfortunately, none of us have been able to have a go yet on Night Trap 25th Anniversary Edition, which is a crying shame. Masterpiece that it was. We talked about this a bunch when they first announced it on the podcast. But yes, it's the FMV game from back in 1992, where girls are all in a house having a slumber party, and then men try and break in, but they're vampires. And so what follows is essentially a, I'd say B-movie, but it's more like Z-movie, exploitation thing where girls run around getting in and out of showers while men in jumpsuits creep up behind them and try and murder them in a way that is in no sense problematic. The things you can look forward to, however, which you just told me about, is that they have deleted scenes from the game, which presumably means there are things that they thought were too rubbish to go in Night Trap, which I find incredible. So that'll be worth getting for just for those. Also, documentaries, a new theatre survivor mode. It seems that this has become a real institution of a game, partially because of its notoriety and partially before, because we talked about it, it was one of the games that's responsible for games having classifications on them. Because people played Night Trap and went, no, the kids are not allowed. We can't allow them. And so they created certification for games. So it has, in some ways, got a lot to answer for. But you can get that now on Switch, £10.99. I'll be honest, it's usually when a Switch game comes out, I'm like, oh, I wish I had a Switch. This time, I'm fine. I'm all right. Has anyone else played anything before I crack on?
Nothing I've enjoyed that I can talk about.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We've both... The favourite thing we've played this week, both Rick and I, we can't talk about till Monday, yeah. Which is really irritating. So I guess we have to gloss over that. But check back on Pocket Gamer and AppSpy on Monday, and you'll have a nice review of something really lovely. So go and have a look. I am going to mention something which I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but I'm going to do it again, even if we have, because I played it a lot, and it's my favourite thing from the past few weeks. Evergarden, which is a puzzle game, hex-based puzzle game, which is kind of the most chill, lovely, beautifully presented, contemplative thing, whilst at the same time being a genuinely clever and quite challenging puzzle game. So the idea is that you start out with flowers, so like roses that are planted in these hexes. So you've got a big grid of hexes, you've maybe got like two or three roses planted there, and then a lot of empty space. Now, there are two moves that you can do at the beginning. One move is you can either drag, if they're adjacent, one rose, head or stem, onto the top of the other rose, and they will then boop, jump over and combine in a single hex to create a bigger flower. And then over the course of the game, if you get two of those new bigger flowers side by side, you can combine them to an even bigger flower, and on and on and on. And the flowers keep evolving into these different interesting shapes and styles until eventually you evolve into one uber thing, and it turns into this giant stone pillar which rises out of the hex and gives you a little triangular totem, which you can then use to unlock songs in a different part of the grove, because it's all set in this kind of spiritual forest. And these songs let you add modifiers to the gameplay. So that's one thing you can do. The other thing you can do is drag a flower head onto an empty square. And what you do is you kind of pull off the flower bit of the flower, the top of it. And then that plants a new sapling. And then once you've done one of those two actions, or both, you tap the timer in the top right-hand side of the screen, and the game turns over, and it effectively speeds up time, and so the new sapling you planted grows to become a rose again, and then you move on to the next bit. And the idea is to, you know, grow as many of these things as humanly possible, and initially you're just like crossbreeding the plants and trying different combinations, and you get better points for better plants. You're like, cool. But then you realize in the top left of the screen it's showing you patterns. So it's showing you maybe like four of these hexes with spaces in between them with a certain silhouette on it. You're like, all right. And then you realize what it's asking you to do is grow these types of plants in these hexes and these alignments. And if you do that, then you get special unlock things. And it becomes, that's the real goal of the game, constantly trying to grow all these different ones. And as soon as you complete one pattern, it will refresh and you get another pattern. So all that stuff, the actual gameplay mechanics of it, play out really beautifully. It's genuinely clever and you have to plan several moves ahead. It's coupled with a presentation that's really lovely in that admittedly indie game style where the colour palette's very Monument Valley, it's very Alto's Adventure, it's that kind of thing. But the music's really nice and there are just plants and trees all around the edge of the screen and there's leaves kind of blowing over the and petals as you play. And then when you unlock these songs, it goes to a different part of the grove and you've got a little magical fox deer thing looking over you and kind of watching you as you play, and then it jumps down, and when you unlock the song, a kind of old-fashioned record player fires up and little fox starts swaying and does a little dance and the rain starts falling, and it's like, it's really nice. Yeah. It's just an incredible amount of thought has gone into the feel of it as well as just the gameplay. I think it's brilliant. There's a video review of it up on AppSpy. Harry really liked it, but go and look at it. I bet you it's not going to do as well as it deserves. It's a premium game, you see. I think it's about $3.99. But it's, if you have any interest in puzzlers, I would really, really strongly suggest anybody play it. I think it's lovely. So Evergarden is the name of that one. I advise everybody jump onto it. Is there really nothing else that anyone's played? Anybody else can talk about a game for a bit?
I don't know. It's just been a bit of a quiet week, isn't it? With, you know, Gamescom and all that going on.
Yeah, you get a lot of announcements rather than new releases. That's the thing.
Next week's going to be great, though.
Oh, it will be good.
Next week sees Valleys Between, I think, launching.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Which we've all been excited about.
And Donut County.
Hang on, does it have the release date?
Yeah, it comes out on Tuesday.
Good. All right, Donut County. Yes, that does look very exciting, and I definitely haven't played it. one thing I mentioned that came out this week, 1 Hour, One Life, which is a really unusual game, and I haven't really got far enough into it to make a judgment call, but it's a top-down game that looks like it's been drawn by a child in crayon, very deliberately so, and it's a survival game of sorts where every minute that you play counts as a year in the life of the character you're playing. So you start out effectively as a baby, even though you're walking around and have hair and stuff. But you have to wander through corridors. The tutorial's very quick to the point where it's telling you to do something, like walk a little bit further, now pick this branch by doing this. And if you're just reading it going, oh, okay, I wonder how you do that, or if your phone goes off in the meantime, then you look back, you're dead. Because the time's passing so quickly and you need to eat something or you die. You need to pick the thing and grab the apple off the tree or you'll die and then move forward. And the idea is you go through your entire life experience building things and moving around and surviving and getting food and getting older. And then at the end of the hour, if you last that long, you then drop dead officially at the age of 60. And then you start again with another person, like another ancestor. So it's got that, I think, that reigns sense of continuing from where your forebear left off. But there's all this evolution going on around you as well because it's done in an open server. So you're seeing other people around you going through this extremely fast life cycle. And I've seen people talk about it when it came out on PC as a really interesting, weird experiment of a game. I haven't played enough. It feels strange on iPad. I don't think the controls are necessarily ideal, but perhaps I just need to get used to it. But it's £4.99, $4.99, which is probably an ask for people to take a gamble on something like this. But interesting nonetheless. So that's 1 Hour, One Life. And also Powerless came out, which is, I think it's kind of an interactive novel, story, puzzle thing, is it?
Yeah, I've played a very brief amount of it. Yeah, it's just a text adventure kind of thing, and you make choices between one of two options. Mm-hmm. So far, there might be more from what I've played. You do something, and then you... character goes and does something, and then you've got a choice and you can do that kind of thing. It's very wordy, you definitely have to pay attention to it if you're going to sit down and properly play it. It's not something you can kind of have in, on the side.
Okay. This is a sort of future, all of London's power has been wiped out by, I think, solar flares, is it?
Yes.
Some other, yeah. So terrible future noir stuff happening. So that's out now. That's also $4.99. And quick mention for Prison Architect, which has now appeared on Switch for $24.99. That's a lot of money for Prison Architect, isn't it?
Is it?
It is. I think you've got the DLCs with it as well, though.
I mean, okay. All right. I just feel like it's been out for a long, long time, and, you know, it was probably about a tenner on iPhone or something, but then...
Oh, true.
It's...
Well, yeah, I think it's free to play on iPhone.
Has it gone free to play?
Well, it started where you can have, like, the opening tutorial, and that's free, and then if you want to unlock extra episodes and content, you have to pay money for it.
I see. But $24.99, we've got reviews of the game when it came out. It's been out for ages now. So you know what to expect, but it's a Switch version. There you go. Prison Architect out now. Okay, that will do for this week. We'll be back next week with a little bit more Gamescom stuff, I expect, as news continues to trickle out. But in the meantime, go play some things. Go and, if anyone genuinely thinks that there is a good video game movie, like unironically, and wants to come at me on Twitter or wherever else, I will gladly tell you that you're wrong. So get involved, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
See ya. Bye-bye.